Cheating Justice, a look at the alleged criminal activity of President George W. Bush and his Vice President Dick Cheney, is the topic of this edition of Radio Curious. Our guest is Elizabeth Holtzman, author of Cheating Justice, How Bush and Cheney Attacked the Rule of Law and Plotted to Avoid Prosecution, and What We Can Do About It. A former district attorney from Brooklyn, New York, and a former congresswoman from New York, Elizabeth Holtzman was a member of the House Judiciary Committee that voted to impeach President Richard Nixon. Her book, Cheating Justice, concludes former President George W. Bush and top members of his administration conspired to violate the laws of the United States. From illegal wiretapping to authorizing torture, Holtzman analyzes what her research shows to be serious criminal acts on the part of the Bush presidency. She asserts that without accountability, our democracy is at stake. Elizabeth Holtzman and I visited by phone from her office in New York City on April 2, 2012, and began when I asked her to describe the crimes set forth in her book.
Well, the book is really focused on a very simple principle, which is accountability, and the accountability of presidents for potential criminal wrongdoing. That standard was created during Watergate when both the special prosecutor was investigating President Nixon's criminal behavior and that of his top associates, and all of them were prosecuted for crimes, and he was named as an unindicted co-conspirator because he was president at the time. When President Bush and Vice President Cheney personally engaged in conduct about which is no question wiretapping in violation of a statute that requires getting a court order, or authorizing torture, which they both admitted to in their books and in statements, as well as embarking the country on a war on a basis of deceptions and lies. Those are impeachable offenses and should have been the subject of an impeachment. When that didn't happen, I said to myself, well, what kind of accountability do we still have? And I took a look at the federal criminal statutes. Under the Constitution, a president who engages in crime is not immune and can be prosecuted when he leaves office. And so with my co-author, Cynthia Cooper, we looked very closely at a number of federal statutes. And there are three areas in which, on the face of it, at least, it appears that the president and vice president may have engaged in criminal conduct, and this needs to be examined. Well, I'm not talking about treaties. I'm not talking about international law. I'm not talking about anything except the federal criminal law, U.S. criminal law. And on the face of it, we examined three statutes which appear to have been violated, all of which carry serious criminal penalties, and all of which are felonies if they are violated.
How does the statute of limitations affect those statutes?
Well, the statute of limitations affects all of those statutes except for the torture statute. The torture statute, first of all, there's no statute of limitations if death results. And secondly, under the Patriot Act, Congress and the President, Bush, removed the statute of limitations whenever the torture creates a foreseeable risk of death or creates a foreseeable risk of serious bodily injury. Well, waterboarding, according to the CIA's own Office of Medical Services, creates the risk of drowning. And so, given that, and that is a serious risk of death, a foreseeable risk of death, there's no statute of limitations, in my judgment, for waterboarding under the Anti-Torture Act. So with regard to torture, there may be no statute of limitations, which means a prosecution for as long as President Bush lives. With regard to wiretapping and with regard to conspiracy to defraud the United States, we're not 100% sure with regard to wiretapping when that statute of limitations would run, because we don't exactly know when the wiretapping that was in violation of the statute stopped. But it could run, we believe, at the earliest with regard to the violation of wiretapping statute. I think it could run, I believe it's 2013 or 14, and the same with conspiracy to defraud the United States. So those statutes of limitations in those two instances will run out in the next few years.
So let's describe the offenses. You mentioned torture, wiretapping. In your book, you talk about lying to Congress.
Well, not all lies to Congress are crimes, thank goodness, because we would really shut down popular discussions with members of Congress and so forth. But defrauding, there's a specific federal statute, and it has a very interesting history. The statute is Section 371, and it's called Defrauding the United States Government, and Congress is part of the U.S. government. Now, that statute was used, interestingly enough, in the prosecution of H.R. Haldeman in Watergate, and it was also used in the prosecution of the Iran-Contra people. So this statute has been used significantly in two prosecutions of very high executive branch officials who were involved in trying to deceive Congress. So its pedigree is interesting and important. But basically what the statute says is that you can't conspire to defraud the Congress. And what we point to is the specific determination that President Bush sent to the Congress to start the war in Iraq. Congress passed a resolution authorizing the president to take us to war in certain circumstances. And the president had to certify in writing that those circumstances had been met. And here's the certification that President Bush sent to the House and the Senate. He said that he is certifying that the war is against a nation who planned, forget the grammar, should be that plan, but a nation that planned, authorized, committed, or aided in the 9/11 attacks. Now, Iraq was not a nation that planned, authorized, committed, or aided in the 9/11 attacks. Nonetheless, the president certified that that was the case, and that certification was critical in terms of getting the authorization to go to war. We believe that on the face of it, you have a violation of the statute conspiring to defraud the U.S. government, and that as a consequence, you have to act. I mean, you can't have a blatant violation of federal criminal law go uninvestigated, unpunished, unexamined. That's what we have here. With regard to wiretapping, And I mean, the president may have some defenses to this, including he didn't know or whatever, but those defenses have to be examined. I want to say, by the way, that just saying that there's a prima facie case doesn't mean that there is a prosecutable case, because it may be on examination of the actual evidence that the evidence crumbles, or that they're very strong defenses, or that for some other reasons that you can't have a prosecution. So all I'm saying is that on the face of it, it is warranted to have a prosecutor examine whether the laws have been violated.
Do you have any information that reveals whether or not these offenses have been investigated by any U.S. attorney?
Oh, we know there's been no investigation. Absolutely no investigation. No one said, the only investigations that have taken place have been lower-level people with regard to torture. See, lower-level CIA agents. That's the only investigation that's been conducted with regard to any of this misconduct. And with regard to wiretapping, I was part of the Congress that supported and created the Federal the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978, which grew out of Watergate. One of the articles of impeachment for Richard Nixon was that he engaged in wiretapping without a court order, and it was politically motivated. Congress saw what the president had done. You couldn't let a president wiretap on his own say-so. They found other enormous violations by the CIA and the FBI of wiretapping. And so Congress passed a law that said, executive branch, you want to wiretap? Even in foreign intelligence matters, you must get a court order. That's what Congress said. We're not letting the president do wiretapping anymore on his own say-so. This is what you have to do. And if you don't do it, it is a crime. Well, President Bush said, I have authorized wiretapping. This is not me, but he's repeated it many, many times, that he authorized wiretapping without getting a court order for at least 43 times. On the face of it, you have a violation of the law. Now the president says, well, you know, I'm president, so I don't have to obey the law. Well, if we go down that road, we're on the road to military dictatorship in this country. We can't be on that road. There's a law, and the president violates it, and he tells the world he's violated it, then you have to do something about it. You have to say, gee, looks like he's violated the law. Well, let's just see if he has, and have a special prosecutor examine whether he's violated the law.
That, in a sense, begs the question, is why has there been no appointment or no activity to examine whether or not President Bush has violated the law?
I think our book is the first book that I'm aware of that really sets out in detail what the grounds would be for a prosecution. And I think many Americans have no idea that what President Bush did, on the face of it, apparently violates the law. So I think that one of the reasons there hasn't been more of an outcry is that Americans are unaware of the fact that you have three federal statutes that may have been violated by the president and vice president. And if presidents can take the law into their own hands, then where are we going as a nation? And what is our future as a nation? So these are very serious, serious questions and need to be addressed.
Let's take a moment because I'd like to say that this is Radio Curious. And in this edition, we're visiting with former Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman, who is also a former prosecutor for the Borough of Brooklyn in New York City. She's the author of Cheating Justice, How Bush and Cheney Attacked the Rule of Law and Plotted to Avoid Prosecution and What We Can Do About It. I'm Barry Vogel. Congresswoman Holtzman, let's talk more about the specific crimes and offenses that you believe the president and his vice president and secretary of defense may have committed.
Well, the third major area has to do with the mistreatment of detainees. There are two statutes that they were very worried about. Well, one statute in particular they were very worried about was the War Crimes Act, because that prohibited cruel and inhuman and degrading treatment. Well, you know, most of what they did was cruel, inhuman, and degrading. You can't really argue with that, and that is a federal crime. What they finally did was to rewrite the War Crimes Act in 2006 and make it retroactively weaken the bill, eviscerate the bill, the law, and then make it retroactive to when it basically first went into effect. So the War Crimes Act, which they were very worried about, they basically have undone. It could be resurrected by Congress, and they could be prosecuted under it, but that hasn't happened. And by the way, just to give you an idea of how aware the president was that their conduct could be criminal, I'm saying criminal. You will find that with regard to the War Crimes Act, because there's a memo that goes from his then counsel, Alberto Gonzalez, who was afterwards Attorney General. This is in January 2002 to the president. It starts off as we discussed, so it means that the contents of the memo were personally discussed between the president and Alberto Gonzalez's counsel. And what does that memo say? It says that we have to opt out of the Geneva Conventions because it will reduce the likelihood of prosecution under the War Crimes Act. So they were very worried about the War Crimes Act, that it would produce prosecutions. And by the way, it wasn't just prosecutions of lower-level people, because they talk about independent counsels and special prosecutors being the ones who would conduct these prosecutions. Well, I wrote this special prosecutor statute. That doesn't apply to lower-level governmental officials. It applies to the president, the vice president, the head of the CIA, and certain very top cabinet officials. That's it. So we know that the president was deeply worried about his potential criminal liability, and they tried to opt out of it by opting out, avoid criminal liability by opting out of the Geneva Conventions, which we did, as you will recall, for, with regard to the Taliban and al-Qaeda. The second statute, they couldn't eviscerate because they basically tried to kill it in a different way, and that's the Anti-Torture Act, which is, again, federal criminal statute and imposes a, and it's a felony, and imposes a death sentence if death results. Here, we know the president has authorized waterboarding. He himself acknowledged that. There's no dispute. The only dispute is waterboarding torture. The U.S. itself has prosecuted waterboarding as torture in many, many instances, other nations of the world. But here's how they dealt with avoiding criminal liability. Basically, they had two big defenses. One is, I'm president, Congress can't stop me from doing whatever I want to do. I think that defense is just nonsense. And the second defense is, which is equally nonsense, is to define torture in such a narrow way that nothing can comply with the definition. Nothing fits in the definition. So they got this lawyer, John Yoo, who's a professor at Berkeley, and he writes a definition. I'll only go into one little part of it because it just tells the whole story about how meretricious and bad this definition was. He said the definition of torture is in the statute is you have to have severe pain, severe mental or physical pain or suffering. Well, you said, forget about suffering. That's just a redundant word. We don't have to pay attention to it in the statute. We just focus on pain. So that's one bit of legal nonsense that he engaged in. And so how do we define severe pain? He says, it has to be the equivalent of the pain of death. Well, that sounds really serious, except if you stop to think about it.
How do we know?
The pain of death, nobody knows what it is.
Exactly.
Nobody knows. In fact, John Yoo was asked by the Office of Professional Responsibility, what is the pain of death? And what do you think he says to this Office of Special Responsibility? He says, I don't know. This is a direct quote. Now, this is a memo containing this definition that goes to the President of the United States. It's supposed to protect the President from prosecution. So we can see that this is just what I call faux fur, F-A-U-X. It's a faux memo. It's just a front. It's not serious. It's not legitimate. It's just a fake memo with fake definitions. And this is supposed to be a defense. It's not going to be a defense, in my opinion. So this is why you need to have a special prosecutor take a look at whether the anti-torture statute has been violated. In my opinion, it certainly gives the appearance of it, but you need a professional prosecutor to look at the matter and to determine whether prosecution should be brought.
So what is your thought or opinion on why there has been no request for a special prosecutor that has been acted upon?
I don't understand. Congress was pretty supine on the issue of impeachment, and they seem to be pretty quiet on this issue. I know that some organizations have called for presidential accountability and special prosecutor, such as the ACLU and some other similar kinds of organizations, but that hasn't happened. And I think that it's a very, very serious and bad decision for this country to go down the road of exonerating presidents from misbehavior and possible criminal conduct. I mean, it's astonishing. Poland now is conducting a criminal investigation, according to newspaper reports, in which one of their top intelligence official is reportedly has been indicted for collaborating with the CIA in the secret prison in Poland where some of the waterboarding took place. How can it be that Poland, with a very short history of democracy, can conduct an investigation into top-level people in connection with torture, and the United States, which has been a democracy for more than 200 years, is closing its eyes?
So who is it within the United States government that would request the appointment of a special prosecutor?
Right now, the Attorney General or the President of the United States could ask his Attorney General to do that, and it could be done. It was done with regard to, during the Bush administration, a special prosecutor was appointed to look at whether at Libby and see whether there was a violation of the law there, and it turned out that there was a violation of law. Libby was Cheney's top aide, and it can be done here. I mean, the idea that that we would have two standards of justice, one for the rich and powerful and one for everybody else, is a formula for the dissolution of a democracy.
So what are your thoughts on why President Obama has not requested it?
Well, I don't really know. I've never talked to him about it. He said we have to look forward, not backwards. But I've been a prosecutor in Brooklyn, fourth largest city in the country. And I can just imagine what would happen with the hundreds of murders, robberies, thousands of murders, robberies, rapes, burglaries, car thefts, and the rest. If I just said, well, people, let's just look forward and not backwards. And people would not only laugh at me, I'd be out of office in 2 seconds. Because you can't ever look forward without understanding where you've come from. And you can't possibly set a standard for justice in a society if you fail to do justice in the cases that are staring you right in the face. What message goes to presidents in the future? If President Bush could engage in these actions, which create, on the face of it, the possibility of criminal conduct, what are future presidents going to do? Maybe it won't be torture abroad. Maybe it'll be torture here. Maybe it'll be a different kind of wiretapping, not just maybe people who are foreign enemies, but maybe political protesters, which is what we saw in the 50s and 60s.
So is it a fair presumption that one of the motivations for your book is that nothing has been done in the 3+ years since Bush has been out of office?
That's correct. And on top of it, nothing has been done since Bush, since 2005, December 2005, when Bush announced that he was engaged in what looked to be apparent violation of the federal wiretapping statute. So we've seen this on, we've seen misconduct, serious and very grave misconduct, including taking the war, the country to war on a basis of false and deceptive statements, and nothing's happened. I mean, look at the price tag for that war. Someone, I think I just saw a number of $3 trillion for that war. Most Americans believe it was, we never should have gone there. It certainly was on a basis of deception. And thousands of Americans died, and how many, and tens of thousands have been seriously injured. Their lives completely changed for the worse. How do we do that and let the people who perpetrated that just smile and walk away?
Beyond your book, Cheating Justice, what do you propose as a way of advancing the thesis of your book?
I think the only way to advance the thesis of the book is for people to who your listeners, who hear about this, to tell their friends, to read the book, to talk to other people, to talk to their representatives in Congress, to talk to their senators and say, hey, you know, we can't let blatant violations of the law go unexamined.
There's no rule.
I mean, it's just the same thing. Look at Trayvon Martin. I mean, this is an outcry because the police did nothing. This is one person killed another person. Is it a crime? Isn't it a crime? Who knows what actually happened? Who knows what will the ultimate verdict be here? But to leave it unexamined? That's created a national outcry. And here we have a president who sent people to a war based on what looks like to be a deception that Iraq, and 4,000 people were killed, and $3 trillion was spent, and zero.
So just to be clear, the only authority to prosecute Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld would be through a special prosecutor.
Well, the Justice Department could do it, but personally, I think that would be a mistake. I think the Justice Department has too much of a stake in protecting itself because Mr. Yu, the memos written by Mr. Yu, came out of the Justice Department. So personally, I believe it should be a special prosecutor. but the Justice Department could prosecute. These are federal crimes, and no one has jurisdiction over them except a federal prosecutor.
And again, a special prosecutor can only be appointed by the Attorney General at the direction of the president or by the president himself.
That's the way the law is now. When we used to have a special prosecutor law that required the creation of the appointment of a special prosecutor, when there were serious grounds to believe that a crime had been committed by a president or top officials of the government, that law is off the books. We should resurrect that law, and then we don't have to rely on a president and on political calculations to deal with the issue of justice.
Well, Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman, thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, a couple of questions about you. Can you share with us a eureka or an aha moment in your life that you live by or that changed your view of how you chose to live your life?
Well, I think, I wouldn't say it was a eureka moment, but it was being in the South in the early days of the Civil Rights Movement and seeing young people. I was pretty young then, too. I was a first-year law student, seeing young people stand up to the cattle prods and the police dogs for simple rights of voting, of desegregation, to do that in a peaceful manner and to win. That made me an optimist.
And what would you like to do with the rest of your one precious life?
I'd like to bring about greater justice in this country, social justice, economic justice, as well as legal justice. And I'd like to see us as a nation that is not only engaged in war-making activities, but that brings the blessings of peace and prosperity, not just to the people of the United States, but around the world.
And finally, is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners?
Well, the book that I finished, aside from my own, is a book called The Hare with the Amber Eyes, which is a wonderful book about, you think at the beginning it has to do with art collection, but it really is about justice, and it really is about some wonderful people, and it's a wonderful story. And it's won some awards, many awards, and it's a highly acclaimed book. I highly recommend it. It has nothing to do with Bush or Cheney.
Elizabeth Holtzman, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Elizabeth Holtzman was elected to Congress in 1973 and sat on the Judiciary Committee of the House of Representatives, which voted to impeach Richard Nixon. She later served as District Attorney for Kings County, Brooklyn, New York. She's the author of Cheating Justice, How Bush and Cheney Attacked the Rule of Law and Plotted to Avoid Prosecution and What We Can Do About It. The book she recommends is The Hare with Amber Eyes, A Family Century of Art and Loss by Edmund Duvall. This interview was recorded on April 2nd, 2012. All Radio Curious programs are free at our website, radiocurious.org. Our phone is 707-462-6541. Email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onestad is our associate producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.